What's up, guys? We are back on Pound for Pound, and I am the Nigerian Nightmare, Kamaru Usman.
Henry Cejudo, a.k.a. Triple C.
A Shot of Lime production.
Guys, UFC 304 went down last night, and interesting night. Might I say the least. I mean, on paper, this was a stacked card. Like, this night was going to be a night full of bang, full of a lot of things that were going to happen, a lot of amazing stuff. But I mean, I have to be honest. You know, I feel like the fans, because I was a fan for this watching, I feel like the fans were feeling like, we didn't really get that, you know, incredible fights like that were put on this card. It just seemed like right. The night didn't really deliver with the fireworks that was put on the card. What do you think, Henry?
Yeah, man. I mean, think about it too. Like, even Dana White said, "Hey guys, you guys do not ask for another motherfucking bump on the bonus because everything was pretty much shit." I mean, God, you know what? I like it when Dana's like that. I like it when Dana's rude. I mean, he straight up said, "It's like, hey, you guys don't be asking for three, you know, when UFC 400 comes out, you guys ain't getting shit. Don't be asking for $500,000 bonus." So I appreciate that when the boss does that. And at the end of the day, yeah, and I'm not too sure if Dana maybe wants to go that route of having, because, dude, the main event didn't start till like 4 something in the morning, dude. Like, could that play an effect? I mean, do we just maybe have the fight earlier? I personally like it when the UFC fights earlier. I'm pretty sure you kind of feel the same way, because sometimes it's like it's good to kind of be a little sluggish on a Saturday morning and just watch these fights. But could the time be a thing? But that being said, Kamaru, I mean, me and the king of cringe, bro. The fight card was absolutely shit.
Yeah, Henry, to be honest with you, well, for one, I don't agree with you with what Dana said. I 100% understand Dana for feeling the way that he feels and said what he said. Yes, he's absolutely right. But as a fighter, no, I don't like that, because, hey, I want him to raise the bonuses sometimes too when I fight again. I want him to raise that bonus. I fought UFC 261, the first fight back with the live audience in the first event back with the live audience in the world. And we didn't get those raised bonus. So I'm a little salty. I'm going to tell you that right now. I'm a little salty. So Dana, please, please. I know you're upset with what happened, but hey, just wait around for me. You know, I wait around for when I jump back in there, just spike it one more time for me. And then that's that. But moving on.
You know what? Let me take it from here, Kamaru. Because, you can introduce the main event, but I really, you know, everybody's looking at this, is going to be looking at our podcast really to get your 2 cents. Because guess what, Kamaru? You may be next. Watching this fight with Leon Edwards and Bilal Muhammad, only thing I got to say, Kush, I told you so. I think Bilal Muhammad is very problematic. I think Bilal Muhammad had a really good game plan. And it's finally until somebody, and you did it that second fight with Leon Edwards. Like, that's the second time you fought him, I was there live before the freaking kick came in. You're fighting the perfect fight, putting him against the cage, taking him down, faking, locking your hands, pulling him off, setting his ass down. And I almost feel like a guy like Bilal Muhammad saw that, and I'm going to fight. Okay, if he wants to be near the cage, I'm going to go ahead and strike with him, take away his leg kick, because I'm going to be more like that boxing range, and I'm going to look for my takedowns. And that's exactly what he did. And a lot of things that is a little bit underrated with a guy like Bilal Muhammad is he's got these little subtle fakes. Not just his little subtle fakes, Kush, but also his jabs. He be jabbing you like right, like he's super comfortable throwing that jab. He's legit getting it, but he's right in your face. Like, if you allow Bilal Muhammad to put you against the cage, man, you're fighting his fight. The time that Leon Edwards started kind of going more into the center, he started to have a little more success defending the takedowns. I mean, there is a lot from round one, from what Bilal Muhammad was able to do, start the pace. The only round that I saw, because practically the whole fight was pretty much the same, the only round that I saw Bilal Muhammad lose was round three. And it was pretty much just Leon Edwards took the back, didn't do any damage, didn't do anything. Towards the end of the fifth, he did rain elbows, but other than that, a lot of what Bilal Muhammad did, there's a lot of mistakes also that Leon Edwards did, staying in all four position, allowing Leon to throw the legs in, like just stupid, like little amateur things like that. You know, not taking any credit from a guy like Bilal Muhammad, but there's a lot of stupid mistakes that a guy like Leon Edwards did. Number one, staying 2-3 feet, you know, against the cage, and then allowing him to get taken down, and then allowing not just the takedown, because you can get back up, you can fatigue somebody by just getting back up as well, but allowing a guy like Leon Edwards, allowing a guy like Bilal Muhammad throw the legs in pretty much without a fight. I mean, I'm looking at this fight as a whole, and I'm just thinking, it's like, man, there's a lot of people up for grabs for this fight, but stylistically with you and him, I think it's the biggest fight at the welterweight division. What's your take on this fight, Kush?
I agree with you, Henry. I think, and I said this before, Leon, the only way that Leon really flips that switch is if he believes he's the champion. And you know that famous quote that, who was it, Teddy Atlas said is once you become a champion, you become 30% better overnight. Is all that means is that belief in that delusion that you are the best, you really believe it. It's solidified. And so that gives you that confidence to where you believe I'm the best. So now you're free to really experiment and throw things that, you know, and do things and throw things that you didn't think you were capable of doing before. I know when I became the champion, when I fought Tyron Woodley, I felt before, I would say maybe 2 years before that, that I was the best in the world. And then I got the opportunity to actually compete with Tyron Woodley, and I went out there and proved that I was the best in the world. And then after that, I fought Colby Covington in that fight that I, to me, was one of my one of my favorite fights. Just because of the back and forth, the way that we were able to commit to just fighting each other. And then I felt free. At that point, I was, okay, let's work on the striking. Let's work on this and that. And let's start putting these boys away because I know I'm the best. Let's start knocking these guys out. Now, the problem with Leon is that's where I remember I said this before this fight. I said, if Leon believes that he is truly the best, then I do see it going for Leon. But with a guy like Bilal Muhammad, Bilal was going to go like this. And you saw that in the whole fight. Nothing changed for Bilal. He just was this pace the whole time. Now, I fought Leon 3 times. I would say a majority of all those fights, Leon put his back up against the cage. Well, he didn't put his back there. I put him there. Up against the cage. You pressure him. You take away his space. Leon just doesn't necessarily know how to fight there when you take away his space. He wants to create the space, so he backs up. And when he backs up, next thing you know, he puts himself up against the cage. Now, when you fight a guy like myself and a guy like Bilal Muhammad that can change levels on you, hey, this is what you're going to get. We're going to change levels. We're going to wrap our arms around your legs, and we're going to take you down every time. And that's what I did in almost every one of my fights. But Leon, over the time, got smart enough to know that, hey, I can use the cage as to my advantage to stand up or to keep myself upright and make it harder for people to keep me down. And that's what he was doing. But there's always, it's almost like, okay, he counters what I do, which is to put him up against the fence, take him down, by using the fence to stand back up and stay upright. But then here comes the counter, the counter, shall I say, in Bilal Muhammad, in understanding that, hey, he uses the fence very well to stand back up. So when he does stand back up, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to change levels back again, and I'm going to dump him either on his head or I'm going to dump him on his back again. And this was textbook. Henry, if you watch this fight, is there anything different that Bilal Muhammad did than what I did to Leon? Fight one or fight two?
Yes, and it was just one thing. All the entries were pretty much the same. Yes. It was the fact that It was the fact that Bilal Muhammad was actually taking the back. And he was taking the back, and he was actually, the way he was wrapping that that outside leg inside the thigh. So I think when you get, and this is something that I have to start doing too, start taking people down and start literally taking backs, because when you take a back, you control the round. Yeah, you may not damage them. Your opponent may not, but the one thing I will say is you are controlling the time. So if that, if you're asking me, Kamaru,
you're absolutely
a lot of similarities that you guys have, but the biggest thing is, he was able to control and take the back and just take more of the time.
100%. You're absolutely right. You hit the nail on the head. Bilal committed to controlling Leon a lot more, to where I was committed to, I wanted to damage. I wanted to be in a position to where I could posture up and hit him. I could basically be over him, hitting him, or to the side, hitting him. I risk being in that position as opposed to Bilal, who wanted to control him. And Bilal did a phenomenal job controlling him. Bilal was able to take the back. Yes, the shots weren't as damaging, but he controlled him for the most part. There was a couple of, you know, mistakes there to where he was locking his feet in between Leon's leg, as opposed to what Leon was doing when he had the back, which is put the body triangle onto the side behind that thigh, which it was, I mean, there was mistakes on both part, but the game plan stays the same. To beat a guy like Leon, Leon needs space because he's a sharp shooter. And I also said this, Henry. The reason why Leon is not feared on his stand-up like that is because Leon is not necessarily a combination puncher. He's not going to put a 1-2-3 together, slip the head, uppercut, bot, right hook, left. He's not necessarily going to do that out in space. Leon is a sharp shooter. I can touch you with this jab straight, follow with the kick, then I have to reset. Or jab, kick, then I have to reset. That's a Leon. But you need space in order to do that. And Bilal Muhammad did the exact thing that you should do with a guy like this. Take away the space. And when you take away the space, first and foremost, the strikes don't hurt as bad if you're smothering them. You take away the strikes from Leon. He can't use his kicks because you took the space away. And now he has to grapple with you. And if he's not conditioned enough to grapple with you, 9 times out of 10, he's going to lose that fight. And that's what we saw there. Yes, it wasn't the most exciting fight, but Leon did what he had to do to get the win. Bilal. Bilal did everything exactly what he needed to do to get the win, and that's smother him, take him down, hold him, beat him up whenever you get the chance. And now we have a new champion.
Yeah, no, it's almost like what you said, man. It's like Bilal Muhammad, we keep, from whatever reason, we keep trying to say Leon, even Daniel Cormier said at the end, congratulations, Leon Rocky, Bilal Muhammad. You know, but I can see where it is, because a lot of people don't believe it still. It's almost like, what? Like Leon, the guy that beat Kamaru Usman, Leon, the guy that beat Kobe, Leon, Leon Rocky Edwards. But it's true. When you get somebody that's able to make you backpedal and they're really good at what they do and they keep that certain threshold the whole time, it's very, very dangerous. I mean, I don't know if it was a fourth. I don't know if it was a fourth or third round. And a lot of people are not really, I mean, a lot of people don't know like the effects of picking somebody up and then dropping them on their head. And that was one of the biggest things that I think that really changed the course of the fight too, because, man, that's a concussion. If you notice, he kind of went a bit limp a little bit, but, dude, he could have been too concussed in the fight too. You know, concussions to me are a lot worse than knockouts, because you're there, but you're halfway there. And then you allow other things to kind of sneak in, and then the damage kind of starts to take place. I mean, granted, I think there's a lot of things that a guy like Leon Edwards did, but finally, Kamaru, the bad habits that Leon was doing in the past has just caught up to him. I mean, can you put him against the cage like as he wants to? Because as you said, he cannot fight. He cannot fight kind of going backwards, but can you control him? Can you take his back? And I think that was just the biggest difference.
Yes, and also the combination. Like I said, Leon is not necessarily a combination guy in the center of the cage and hold that position to find the he's not that guy. Leon has a great combination. It's a leadoff combination. 1-2-3, kick. But I have to reset and then find, okay, when is the time to go again? You know, he's that guy. But all to beat that style, all you have to do is step into it. You smother that. And when you smother him, he wants to create space. He needs space. So he steps back to try to create that space. But you take one or two steps backwards, guess what? You're on the black line. Now you get to feel the cage. And so and there's this bad habit of this. Well, it's not I don't want to say it's a bad habit, because some people are effective with that type of block when they do this thing that Dustin Poirier does to try to potentially get you to hit the elbow to potentially break your hand. But it was actually not – it was the one – I would say that the best strike that Bilal was throwing is Bilal was able to read it, and Bilal was sneaking uppercuts in through there, and he landed a couple of them, I believe. And so it was great. But you see – you just look at the fight. It was almost – Leon couldn't hold that center position. Even when he did try to put a combination together, which is one of the two or three punches, it was almost the third punch was sloppy. His chin was up. It was just like whiffing just to try to create some type of space. And Bilal didn't give that to him. And so it's very difficult to fight a style like that if you are not prepared to grapple. And obviously, looking into that division right now, there's only a select few guys that are willing to grapple and like that. And those are the guys who are going to have success there, because they were at a specific spot to where we could do everything remotely well.
Of course. And you know what this tells me too, Kamaru, is you can be a good striker. You could be a great striker, but not every striker knows how to fight backwards. I mean, if you go back and watch that fight with Israel Adesanya, I mean, noticed how pressure is what killed him. You know what I'm saying? Pressure is what pretty much killed a guy like Bilal Muhammad. And I'm also thinking of the blueprint of a fight between the between Sean O'Malley and Merab Dvalishvili. Is like, could you know, Merab Dvalishvili could pretty much implement the same damn thing. You press him, get him against the cage. And one thing that Leon Edwards was doing wrong is he was defending right against the cage. And when you're defending right against the cage and you do this, you leave your legs open. So if you are going to be 3 feet against the cage, you're going to have to be careful with defending. You're either going to have to go or move, step out, but you cannot go in to defend, because when you do this, you allow the legs and the entrance to come in, and that's where pretty much Bilal Muhammad was coming in.
I get it. I get what you're saying, but Henry, we'll get into that obviously completely at another time. But Sean O'Malley is not. But you can't compare Sean O'Malley to Bilal to Leon Edwards. You cannot, because Sean O'Malley has lateral movement. I mean, I'm high on this guy for a reason. Like, this kid's good. He has lateral movement. His angles are completely different. Leon's going to take one or two steps backwards and kind of wait to try to land something. The lateral movements aren't there. Sean O'Malley's on a completely different level footwork-wise when it comes to setting those things up. So, yeah, I wouldn't compare the two. But you have a point where you say it could be a potential implementation of the same game plan to potentially beat a guy like Sean O'Malley. But you're going to have to work completely hard with cutting him off, because he has fantastic angles. But yes, so what is next for a guy like Bilal Muhammad? I'll ask you.
You gotta let me take over that,
cuz. Go ahead. My bad.
We have Leon Rocky Edwards at number one now, the number one contender. After getting dominated, you know what needs to be the number one contender? The one and only, my co-host, Kamaru Usman. You got Shokhov Rakhmonov, you know, who also is a great striker, likes to miss his... I mean, that dude's got a freaking chin on him, man. And he also likes to grapple. And I do believe that between all you guys, the guys that people are kind of not respecting or not bringing up the name as much as Jack Della Maddalena. If I'm saying it correctly.
Jack Della Maddalena. Well, I mean, he's there. You know, it's just tough because JDM is on a completely different side. He's on the opposite side of the world. So it's a little difficult to keep him in the... I mean, just remembering. Because... And he's still relatively... His name is still slowly building the buzz. So... But yeah, he's a guy that definitely I keep my eye on, because he's definitely made a case for himself. I like the way that he fights. You know, of course, fans are going to instigate. Fans are like, oh yeah, he talks shit about you. He said this and that. I'm sure he did. But I like the way that he fights. I like the fact that I like his patience. He definitely still has holes. I believe everyone in the division has holes, except myself. Just kidding. All right, but I think everyone's beatable. I think JDM has holes. I mean, you saw in the Gilbert Burns fight. Gilbert was winning the whole fight until that knee landed in that third round. And Shavkat Rakhmonov, he's also very talented. I mean, when you have a guy that's 18-0 that's looked impressive in all of his fights leading up so far in the UFC, of course, he makes a case for himself. For me, personally, I would love that fight. I believe we were in talks to potentially make that fight happen before, but unfortunately, it didn't happen. But, hey, I would like to go out there and get a fight under my belt. And then, of course, I'm right there to challenge for that belt.
Okay, so what you're telling me, Kamaru Usman, you know, the greatest welterweight of all time, if you're the matchmaker, you're looking to possibly you wouldn't want to go in there and fight Bilal Muhammad for the belt. You would want to get one and then fight him, or what are you thinking, bro?
Absolutely. Are you talking to the fighter, or are you talking to the realist, the human being from the outside looking at the whole spectrum of everything, trying to satisfy everybody? You tell me which one you want. Or do you want the Nigerian Nightmare Kamaru Usman?
Well, give me both, baby.
Okay, I'll tell you right now. You want the Nigerian Nightmare Kamaru Usman. Give me ample time to get in there at the end of the year, top of next year. I'll go in there and I take my welterweight strap back, 100%. But if you're talking to the man that's from the outside looking in to try to satisfy everybody, when you look at the landscape of everything, yes, it's all he lost to Leon Edwards, but you know, people have amnesia very quickly. People forget that I was winning almost 24 minutes of that fight until the lightning struck, and Leon landed that kick. And I think when you land something like that, it almost kind of spoiled Leon to where he forgot that, hey, I was being dominated this exact same way, to where you feel, oh, I'm the champion. I can just do whatever I want. No, you have to go out there and actually fix those mistakes, which clearly he didn't fix. But because of that loss, now as the UFC, as the company, you're going to go, okay, I want to get Usman a fight to really show the fans that he's back, to show us that he's back and he deserves a chance to potentially go out there and get that title back. So in order to do that, give him, you know, someone at the top, which could be Shavkat Rakhmonov, or it could be JDM. Doesn't matter. Give him one of those fights, boom, then he's next in line to fight for that title. So,
okay.
Yeah,
okay.
That's the company.
Okay, side. No, I get it. No, and I appreciate that. I mean, you're a lot more honest with me on that. So if I'm in your position, be like, hey, Dana White, give me this, dude. I want him now. Give him to me. I'm ready to. I'm gonna cut his damn throat. But there's also rumors that Rakhmonov is gonna fight Ian Garry. You know, and then honestly, that only leaves one person too. That's just right there. That's JDM. I mean, if they do set up that fight with Rakhmonov and Ian Garry, and you do fight a guy like JDM towards the late this year, beginning of next year, I mean, could Dana White just look at the landscape and say, hey, let's see who performs better is going to more likely to get that fight? Does that seem, am I onto something, Kush?
Absolutely, 100%. I think that would be, for a company's perspective, that would be the fair assessment. But you also have so many pay-per-views that you need guys to continue to perform. And you're looking at a pay-per-view like Abu Dhabi in October. You need a guy like Bilal Muhammad or a guy like myself on a card like that, or a guy like Shavkat Rakhmonov, you know, on a card like that, because you're going into Muslim territory now and you need a guy that the people want to see fight, want to see perform. And you got a new champion in Bilal Muhammad. So it makes sense to make a fight like Bilal Muhammad versus Shavkat Rakhmonov, because he's the only one. I still believe Jack Della Maddalena, even though he's great, he's on a good run, I still believe JDM needs a little bit more. You know, I think he needs a fight, because to skip Shavkat Rakhmonov, to skip myself to skip Leon Edwards. I still think he needs one fight to get him to that title contention. Even though I think he's right there in the mix, I still think he needs one fight to get him there. But I could see the UFC going, hey, let's do Bilal Muhammad versus Shavkat Rakhmonov in October. Yeah. And winner of a guy like winner of myself versus JDM at the top of next year. Oh, and also now you can do Leon Edwards versus Ian Garry. I think those are all great fights. It is what it is. Of course, I don't mind. I don't shy away from any. I would like Shavkat. I would like JDM. It doesn't matter. For me right now, like I said, Henry, the most important thing is for me to get healthy. Once I'm healthy again, then I'll get in there because I truly know that I am still the best welterweight on the planet. And once I am healthy and I'm able to go out there and display that, I do. I make magic happen. And I said it. I told the world. I said, hey, I'm a bad motherfucker. I said that. I told the world that. I told the world that. In, I believe, 2018, I told the world that. Whoa. I said, hey, I'm a bad motherfucker. They didn't believe me. In 2019, I went out there with Covington and I told you, hey, I told y'all I'm a bad motherfucker. And then, hey, in 2021 with Masvidal, it happened. You know, so I need to get healthy. Once I'm healthy, hey, I'll go out there and I'm able to give those magical performances. But, you know, congratulations to Bilal Muhammad. I'm anxious to see how Leon Edwards is going to regroup and going to get back if he does get back. I know he was talking about moving up before this. I mean, he's a guy that I would like to see move up to middleweight. But what do you think? I would like to see him move up to middleweight because if he can put the size on, because his style is, I would like to see him move up to middleweight because there's not a lot of middleweights that are grappling like a guy like myself and Bilal and some of these guys could grapple. So I wouldn't mind seeing him at middleweight.
Yeah, but no, not really. I don't think that's a good idea. I think there's too much power at middleweight. Remember, that's 15 pounds, Kamaru. That's 15 pounds of,
I agree with you.
You know, you got Idra Adi. Sanya, you got Strickland, you got Robert Whittaker, you got Mr. Secret Juice, Paulo Bohashini. I mean, the power up there, it is different. That's why it's special for guys.
But it will be
that's
a fun
that's
fight.
Why, no, the reality is, that's fight. Why it's special for somebody to become a two-division champ. And to me, that's pound for pound. But I just don't think Leon's at that. I don't think he's at that leverage, and particularly because he still has those bad habits. He allows people to put the legs in. He stays too close against the cage. Like guys at that division, they bring a lot more power to. So I personally think he should move down. But anyhow, where does that? The other thing too is like, where does that also leave a guy like Islam Makhachev against a guy like Bilal Muhammad? Apparently they're friends, but I know that one of Islam's biggest dreams is to become a two-division champ. I mean, will Islam Makhachev, will we see a match between Islam Makhachev versus Bilal Muhammad? Because right now, Islam is going through everybody. He's going through everybody, and Dana White's going to have to grant him an opportunity to go up and become a two-division champ. So these are a lot of questions to be asked.
Yeah, there's still a couple of guys for Islam to fight. You've got Armin Sarukian to fight. You've got Justin Gaethje to potentially fight. So there's still some guy there to fight. I think Islam gets
that's
through.
That's two fights tomorrow.
Yeah, but after those two fights, then, yeah, of course, you know. But by then, I'll be champion again. So, it you know, there's no point. If as long as you're still getting paid, you're getting paid. Anywho, anywho, moving on. We've got, we had a heavyweight co-main event, which was, I mean, to be honest, I told you, it's very hard for me to doubt a guy like Tom Aspinall anymore. And I think right now, Tom Aspinall is the best heavyweight in the world, in the UFC. The best heavyweight.
Really? So you're putting him above Jones.
Hey, I said
above listen, Francis Ngannou.
No.
Is that what I'm hearing from you, Kamaru?
In the UFC, active right now, I think Tom Aspinall is the best heavyweight.
Okay,
I think
can I say something
John
to Kamaru?
Jones. John Jones is the greatest mixed martial artist we've ever seen. I would say this right now. John Jones, Demetrius Johnson. Like, yes, there's this debate, but John Jones is the greatest mixed martial arts artist we've ever seen. I'll tell you that. He's the GOAT. But right now, I believe Tom Aspinall is, I mean, come on. And everyone is speculating, oh, was it an early stoppage? At first, I would think so, but this is the thing with big boys, though. Yes, the jab didn't necessarily complete. It was just kind of momentum. He's coming in. He ate the jab. Okay, he sat him down. But he sat him down. Curtis was still there. Curtis saw him coming. Curtis tried to get back up. But those are big boys. He fell on Curtis. He jumped on Curtis. And when you jumped on him, I mean, those boys don't move as fast. And then he starts wailing off. And there was moments to where Curtis was there trying to get up. A shot lands on the side of the head. He goes back down. He tries again. So it was just kind of this gray area. I don't think it was an early stoppage. I just think, you know, Curtis was just kind of caught off guard and was unable to recover quickly enough before Tom Aspinall was able to pounce on him and completely finish the fight. I just think it was a tremendous fight. I think the speed of Tom Aspinall sets him apart from every heavyweight right now. His speed, his awareness, his fearlessness to go in there and know that, hey, my shots are going to get there before yours. I think you have to put him in there. You have to say that Tom Aspinall right now is the greatest, is the best heavyweight. And I mean, honestly.
So above Jones, just say it.
Number one right now, active. Yes, Tom Aspinall is number one.
Okay. Yeah, and I will agree with the dude is gifted, man. The dude is gifted, but because he's only been fighting for, you know, what is it, 37? Okay, Aspinall's total fight time and last four fight UFC bouts, last four fights, bro. 3 minutes and 37 seconds. Jesus Christ. But that could also be his worst enemy, too. Because you know a guy like Jones is smart, bro. A guy like Jones, we cannot doubt the dude. The dude could wrestle, and the dude will probably make this dude fight that B-side. But I will say this, man. Tom Aspinall's agility, the fact that he's agility and he's a counter puncher, like he really did counter that jab very well with that overhand, bro. Like his IQ on his feet is good.
Phenomenal.
But we also have to see him in those other areas, man. And like once you start seeing people in these other areas, like I'm going to go back and talk about Pereira, striker versus striker. Everybody's striking with the striker. Let's see them fight these guys like a Bilal Muhammad, guys that are going to really mix things up, guys are going to make things super problematic. And I just think that's one thing that I still want to see a guy like I would love to, if he doesn't fight Jones, I'd like to see him fight Ciryl Gane, man. I think that fight would actually be good. But I personally don't believe that. I do believe that John Jones after this fight, I believe that he's done. And the only reason why I say that he's done is because he either gets the Alex Pereira fight or he's just done. You know why? Because Tom Aspinall is that fucking dangerous.
I'm going to tell you right now.
Am I wrong, Kush? Come on, tell me.
You're right in a sense. You're right. But Tom Aspinall has showed that. He took down Alexander Volkov, the tallest guy in the division, and armbarred him. Like he's that straight armbar. He's that good. He has submissions under his belt. He can wrestle. I can't doubt this guy anymore. Now, like I said, John Jones is the greatest mixed martial artist we've ever seen. I have no doubt that John Jones, using his fight IQ, his experience, can figure out a way to beat a guy like Tom Aspinall. But as I'm saying, active heavyweights right now, Tom Aspinall is the best heavyweight. And you're talking about a guy like Ciryl Gane. Yes, I love Ciryl Gane. I love his style. But I just think Tom Aspinall is too much for a guy like Ciryl Gane. Tom Aspinall just is too much, well-rounded. And also, you said you want to see him tested in those areas. Curtis Blaydes is that guy that can. Who better than a guy like Curtis Blaydes? Curtis can wrestle. Curtis can grapple. Curtis has hellacious top ground and pound. Like, come on. And Tom Aspinall still was able to get through him. So I have to take my hat off to him. I have no doubt that a guy like John Jones, the greatest we've ever seen, can figure out a way to beat him. But right now, Tom Aspinall is he believes it. You can see in his confidence, in his resilience.
He's a real heavyweight.
He is. And, you know, hats off to him. Honestly, you're saying Pereira goes up there. I think Tom Aspinall stops him.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he does it relatively quickly. I think he does it quickly.
People are guessing Pereira too damn much. Like these dudes, these heavyweights, they're saying all that.
I told you already. I think Pereira put his hands on a lot of heavyweights, with the exception of a guy like Tom Aspinall. I think Tom Aspinall is a problem right now, and hats off to him. Congratulations. But John Jones is the greatest we've ever seen, and that needs to be the end of that debate. John Jones is the greatest we've ever seen. Tom Aspinall right now is the best heavyweight in the world. And this is the crazy thing is, why do we have a heavyweight champion and we have an interim heavyweight champion? Interim is defending the belt. Like, that's ridiculous. John Jones does not need a belt to still be a humongous, tremendous fight. He doesn't need a belt. Leave John Jones. John Jones could come back and fight anybody, and he should be a pay-per-view. It's just like Conor. Conor does not need a belt to come back and still headline a pay-per-view event. No, neither does John Jones. John Jones left. He can just walk away. He was an undefeated champion in the light heavyweight division and in the heavyweight division. He does not need a belt to say that. Tom Aspinall right now is the heavyweight champion.
Well, I like it. Well, let's close the book on that. Let's move on, Kurt.
Let's move on. There's a couple other fights under the orbit. Bobby Green and Paddy Pimblett, Henry. I, my brother, I just think... I just think...
He got his cush. Yeah. He got us, bro. Like nobody, come on. Dude, that transition was ridiculous, bro.
No, it was not ridiculous.
I got to give it up to Patty the Batty.
It was come not on, ridiculous. Stop that. Run it back. It was not ridiculous. Okay, if you shoot on a guy and a guy grabs a guillotine choke, Henry, as wrestlers, we know, angled off to the other leg. Easy. Just step over to the other leg. That guillotine's dead. But no, you stayed in there and gave him an opportunity because I just think he wasn't comfortable there because that's not familiar territory for a guy like Bobby. But, and I think Bobby gave him too much respect. And I know that's speaking to the experience King Green.
Come on, Kush.
I think he gave him a little too much respect by taking his time. I think a guy like this is a young whippersnapper. You got to jump on him. King Green, you got to jump on him and start talking to him right away. Why are you socking him in the mouth? You don't give him a round to get adjusted because he's nervous. He's still trying to get into this fight. You were giving him too much time, too much respect by letting him come into the fight. And I think that's kind of what bit Bobby in the butt. And especially to King, where you make King. A mistake like that. King Green in the butt when you make a mistake like that. But all in all, if it was, hats off goes to Paddy Pimblett. He was still able to come out there and get it done again. It doesn't matter how he's doing it. It doesn't matter if he looked phenomenal or not. He got it done by finish. So we got to give him his props.
And you know what, Kamara, I'll be the first person to say, hey, you know what? The dude's crafty. The dude finds a way to win, and that just proved it. That just proved to me that just the transition, whether Bobby should have or King should have done a certain thing or whatever, he was able to transition very well from a guillotine to eventually a triangle to eventually an armbar. Like it was something very, very precious. I think what's next for him, what's next for a guy like Paddy Pimblett? Oh, man, I think he should probably run it back with that Gordon kid. If he's gone that much better, he's gone, you know what I mean? I think that one fight that everybody thought Gordon won in that fight, I think maybe he should run that back. Or he goes after a top tenner. I want to say that Paddy is maybe, what is he, like 14? Is he 14 in the ranking? I think that put him into the top 15. I think it's good. I think it's good for the UFC. And obviously, he did carry that $100,000 bonus, too, which just adds a little bit more to his bank account. I mean, the dude's doing something. The dude is himself too. But like, you cannot discredit that. Like, he's not trying to act like this tough guy. He's not trying to be different. Like, it's him, dude. Like, he goes out, he dances, he likes the techno, certain things.
I don't fucking care. Henry, I don't fucking care. Statement made, bitches. I don't fucking care.
Hey, we can hate on him all we want. The dude is winning, and we gotta respect it. And you know, best of luck to Patty. You know what's cool? You know what's cool about all this is like we can admit, dude. And when somebody proves you wrong, like you gain a lot more respect. And I hope he continues to keep winning. Same thing with like Jake Paul. Like I hope Jake Paul can continue to keep winning because it's almost like, damn, this dude keeps getting away with it. But they're training hard. They're getting better. And they're picking the right matchups, and I think that's something that we have to respect in the day, because we're all at the end of the day we're all fighters, but we're all prize fighters.
Absolutely, and I mean the rest of the fights kind of, you know, they went how we kind of expected them to go. Gregory Rodriguez was able to pull off a decision win over Duncan. Was able to pull off this was a good fight, but Gregory was able to pull it out at the end. And obviously Arnold Allen fighting Giga Chikadze, and Arnold Allen was able to pull that one off just by the pressure. He just was able to stay in front of him, stay pressuring, and was able to get that victory. But yeah, Henry,
that's what I'm trying to get to real quick. Just to kind of touch up on that. Guys that are great strikers, you could be a great striker offensively, but there's not a lot of guys, Kamaru, that could fucking fight going backwards. And I'm sorry to say this, but that's Giga. Like, Giga cannot fight with people pressuring him. He loses the leg kick. If you don't give Giga space, he's in trouble. You give him space, he's like the most dangerous dude. He's got heavy, thick legs, but Arnold Allen was just able to take a page out of what Calvin Kattar did. And man, like, there's going to have to be a lot of restructuring, because I know how good Giga is and how good he could be, but he needs to restructure his career and to really spend time on all areas, bro, because he is too good. He is too talented. At one point, I saw this dude potentially fighting for the title and going up against the best of the best, but that's not the case. I hate to see talent go out like that, but it's what it is, Kush.
Yeah. So, I mean, we come to the fight that I felt was the most heated fight on the card. This was the fight that I really, the fight I was looking forward to the most, Henry. I have to be honest with you, was Manel Kopp taking on Mohamed Mukhaev. This was the fight that has been built over a year now, that they've been scheduled to fight before, fell out, and now this fight was put together again. And this was the fight. I mean, they need damn security. They weren't even able to get a stare down in at the weigh-ins, because it was so much animosity. Like, listen, myself, if I remember a fight that was heated recently in memory, myself and Colby Covington, we were pretty heated, but we were still able to get a face-off. These guys couldn't even get a face-off. These guys inside the octagon, there was security before, just to keep them in line before the fight started. And then the fight starts, and we just get a big... it's disappointing, because I know how talented a guy like Manel Kopp is, and also Mohamed Mukhaev. I know how talented they are. I think sometimes you get into a situation to where it's so much built up that both guys are kind of timid, and both guys don't want to be the one to make the first mistake. But and with respect to Manel Kopp, it looked like he did injure his toe. But he was still able, he's so talented. That's a guy that if you want to get your hands on someone, because he defended all those takedowns well. I think by the second round, you should have threw caution to the wind and said, hey, I can stop these takedowns, and I need to put hands on this guy, because he was faster. It looked like he was a little bit more athletic, and they were just content with not really necessarily bringing the fight like we were expecting. This was the fight that was expected to be fight of the night. This was the one that was supposed to blow the roof off of Manchester, and it just didn't deliver.
Yeah, no, 100%. You know what's crazy about it too, Kamaru, is the flyweights needed this. Like, the flyweight division, because you get all these foreigners, like a lot of these guys, they don't talk, man. They don't create storylines. They don't do shit. So the fact that Mukhaev and Kopper, they're both freaking doing their thing, you know, altercation. And this whole thing started from the UCPI. Apparently there's a headbutt that happened against a guy like Mukhaev, and then Mukhaev sucker punches him at the hotel after he says, hey, my Muslim brother, let's take a picture. And then, you know, from weigh-ins, the fact that they were just separated, they couldn't even do a stare-off, two all the way to the cage. And then they fight. It's like they're just like play sparring, or they're like capoeira, whatever the fuck you want to call it. But it was terrible. It was horrible. And unfortunately, that's what caused Mukhaev to pretty much lose his job. The UFC matchmaker said, hey, man, you know, you got to be more exciting. Like, stop wrestling all the damn time. We want to see action. And he just didn't take that into consideration. So it's unfortunate because a guy like Mukhaev, he could be anybody at 125 pounds. The dude is dangerous. But he's also, he hasn't made those right business decisions where he's let a lot of his pride get in the way. And that's really going to cause him about, you know, becoming the best in the world. It's unfortunate because the dude could be problematic for anybody, including the champion, Alexander Pantoja. But now he's without a job, Kush.
You're absolutely right, Henry. And that's what a lot of these guys have to really understand at the core level, at the basic level of it, is this is, yes, of course, this is a sport. We want to be the best in the world. But also, this is also a business of entertainment. And these guys, when you sell that, when you say you're going to do this, you're going to do that, you better come out there and you better do it. And I'm going to have to be honest with you because I've been on both sides of it. I absolutely have been on both sides of this. And when myself and Kobe Covington said, hey, we are going to do this. We are going to fight. We went out there and we fought. And you got that result. And this is what takes you to that next level as a fighter, as an entertainer, as someone that is beloved by your work, by the art that you put out. This is what takes you to that next level. When you say you're going to fight and you come out there and you do fight, that right there transcends everything. Now, myself and Kobe Covington said that, and we went out there and we did the exact same thing. We did the exact thing. We went out there and we fought. And that fight turned out as great as it did. Now, I was also on the other side, to where myself and Masvidal, we the first fight, we said, hey, we're going to fight. And I went out there, with Masvidal, and the performance didn't look great, that first one.
Yeah, you just played it safe.
Exactly. And I circumstances, whatever. It is what it is, what happened. Pandemic, it doesn't matter. I didn't perform the way that I said I wanted to perform. And yo, the fans let me know that. The company let me know that. To where I felt just so disappointed in myself. I said, I want that one back. I felt like I cheated myself. I cheated my coaches with the work that I put in for this fight. And I cheated my supporters, my fans. I want that one back. Which is why after the Burns fight, I said, hey, I want the fight back. He said he needed more time to prepare. Now you have more time to prepare. I said it on the broadcast. I said, hey, I'm going to do everything in my power to put that man away. And we went out there the second fight. Masvidal brought his A game. And he's a phenomenal fighter. He's an amazing fighter. He said what he wanted to do. He came out there. He tried to do it. And I said what I wanted to do. And I went out there and I tried to do it. But for a fight like this, when you build it up so much, then you go out there and you don't deliver, it makes it very, very difficult for the bosses to say they want to keep you. And I think, yeah, that played a huge role in Dana White saying, you know what, we're going to part ways with Muhammad Mukhaev. And Manal Kopp, Dana White's not exactly happy with your performance. Manal Kopp, I like him. He's a friend of mine. And I think he's much more talented than what he showed out there. And I know he's disappointed with himself because this is a guy that could be the champion in that division. I think he just needs to go back and needs to regroup. Hopefully he gets well from that injury, and we'll see him back. But yeah, that fight just didn't deliver, and I think that just kind of the night was flat. I think Henry, that whole card was flat, you know, flat for me.
You better be careful, man. Dana's watching this, Kush. You better be careful with that, man.
But Dana's. I mean, I agree with what Dana said, and I'm just going off of that. But yeah, the whole night was flat. It was flat with your picks. It was flat with my picks. Because if we go to the underdog, Henry, my dog, hey, you ain't really do too well. You ain't do too well, my brother. But yeah.
And that's the beauty of underdog too, man. It's like, man, I gotta maybe spend a little more time in these areas. Because according to people that I actually thought that were going to win, like a lot of my bets were actually on, but when it came down to significant strikes and fight time, I was off, dude.
Listen, completely. Listen, You're going to tell me, and this is what I'm going to piggyback off of the Henry. You're absolutely right. You're going to tell me that Curtis Blaydes is not going to throw more than 16 or how many that is, 17, 19 strikes? You're going to tell me Curtis Blaydes in that whole fight, 25-minute fight, he's not going to throw more than 19 strikes or he's not going to land more than 19 strikes? I don't believe you. And look at that. It doesn't happen. That's what's so crazy about this. That is what's crazy about this. I didn't believe this. I thought for sure that was a shoe-in.
Yeah, but this is why I love underdog, because that means I just have to really, man, really study the opponents a lot more thoroughly. Like I said, you can get who you think is going to win a lot more correctly than if you really know if you really study these opponents, man. It's different because it's all according. It's a lot more precise. That's what I love about underdog fantasy.
Absolutely, and I mean it was great. It goes and coincides with the fights. I mean, if you look at the Patty Pimblett, Bobby Green, the reason I chose lower on the significant strikes for is because I knew Bobby Green definitely needed to put hands on Patty Pimblett, but Patty Pimblett needed to grapple. He needed to take him down, which of course was going to be something that was going to hinder that significant strike, standing up and throwing strikes. But you know, all in all, it was another UFC 304. It's funny how these things just keep rolling and rolling and rolling. It waits for nobody. But as always, you know, we want to say a special shout out and a thank you to Underdog Fantasy Sports, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Now, guys, remember, all new users to Underdog will receive up to $250 in bonus cash and a pick'em special by using code P4P. Support the show and click the link down below to get started. Thank you, Underdog Fantasy, for always supporting the show.
All right, 10-4. Well, that's good shit, Kush. I think this is a really, really great show.
Yeah, Henry. And as always, I am the Nigerian Nightmare, Kamaru Usman.
Henry Cejudo, a.k.a. Triple C.
We are out.